From the heartland of America, focused on God, family, and country, the mouthpiece of the Midwest, this is Dale Carter's America.
And we're back for another adventure on Dale Carter's America. Hi, I'm Dale. He's Kurt Wheeler, and I am wearing black today. It's Black Monday after the Chiefs game against the Buffalo Bills, which I'm sure we'll get into here in just a little bit. Our podcast is growing by leaps and bounds with so many different platforms and so many different ways that you can get Dale Carter's America. Kurt, why don't you give us the rundown?
Yeah, so obviously we would love to have you check out the video podcast. We do a lot of clips and articles and things like that, so make sure you're subscribed on YouTube or Rumble. And then you can also listen to the audio podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And then follow us on Facebook, particular, or Instagram. We post some stuff there as well.
Okay. And we have a lot of stuff to get to today, including a lot of clips. And Lisa Schifferdecker, who's one of our top fans on the podcast, now has watched two episodes. She was audio only for a long time, but now she's watched two episodes. And so it's growing on her.
We're converting people to the video.
There this podcast will grow on you like moss on the north side of a tree. Trust me on that. Hey, trust me when I tell you that for insurance needs, you really want State Farm. State Farm is the gold standard of insurance. And when you've got a guy like Bob Watson on your team, you take it to another level entirely. Bob Watson is my insurance guy. He has been for nearly 30 years. His offices are at 7th and Main in Blue Springs, a tremendous staff who will be very responsive when you need them. And that's the true test of insurance. When you need them, are they there for you? And Bob and his team will be there for you. Get a great rate. Get a rate quote, 816-229-7878, 816-229-7878, auto, home, and life. End of the year is a perfect time to get a rate quote. End of the year, we start looking at things like Time's Person of the Year. And really, Taylor Swift?
I mean, kind of saw that one coming, honestly.
Really? I mean, you know, when you think of Time's Person of the Year, used to be Time's Man of the Year, and that became, you know, totally politically incorrect.
Right.
Now it's Person of the Year. I mean, how does that hit you as a younger guy? Do you think it's okay?
I really don't care, to be honest. I don't think anyone my age is really, you know,
reading Time,
waiting with bated breath to who the Time Person of the Year is going to be.
Did you see the meme that I put up on our Facebook page of Taylor Swift on the cover?
No.
Oh, you have to go look at that.
I'll find it.
Because that is hysterical. I listen to Gary and Eric a lot on Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara has been a guest on this show before, and they were going off on it. It's like, really? I mean, is this now the Grammys? Next time, should Carrie Underwood get it? Because Underwood,
I didn't see this.
You know, because Carrie Underwood's songs are better than Taylor Swift's. Who knows? But there's the meme for you if you want to pull that up. I can't take credit for it, but I just put stuff up on the Facebook page these days, and it looks like Joey B's not only getting a whiff of Taylor's underarm there, but he's also copping a feel.
Yeah,
that's just kind of wrong.
That's typical Joe. Yeah. Typical Joe.
What would Travis
at
Kelce think about that?
Hijinks again.
What would Travis Kelce think about that?
I don't think he would like it.
I don't think he'd like that very much at all. Of course, you know, the Chiefs aren't playing that great now. We need to get that thing turned around. But this is not a football podcast. This is a politics and what's going on in the world podcast. So we talk about AM radio. And, you know, I'm conflicted on this, Kurt, because as a broadcaster who started on AM radio back in the late 70s, and the first three jobs I had, first three jobs I had in radio were on AM radio. And in fact, you know, for 10 years when I worked in Kansas City, I had a side hustle of doing play-by-play on an AM station for Blue Springs and Blue Springs South High School football. But I get what Rand Paul is doing. He is the only person in the Senate who's kind of standing in the way of making it mandatory for the automakers to still include AM radio on the vehicle's radio. And, you know, when you think about that, we spend a lot of time on this podcast railing against government mandates for this and government mandates for that. And I get it, and I'm with Rand Paul on this. We don't want the government to tell automakers they have to have AM radio. AM radio listening, there are about 10 million people a day who still listen to AM radio. It's big in the ag world. It's big in the rural areas. It's big for news talk, sports talk, things like that. You would think that the market would tell the automakers, hey, we still want AM radio in the car.
So Congress is trying to pass a bill to mandate that AM radio stays in the cars.
Right.
And Rand Paul is like one of the only objectors.
He's the only one objecting to it. And because, you know, in the Senate, you know, you can hold up things with just one vote. He is holding it up. But and at first it kind of pissed me off. And then I thought about it and I'm like, you know what? When I think about where I stand and what my views are and what my feelings are, yeah, that kind of makes sense.
What is the logic behind mandating AM radio?
Well, the National Association of Broadcasters has a pretty big lobby in Washington, D.C., and they're talking about it. So we've got Congress people, including our friend Mark Alford, because a huge part of his district is rural, and those folks depend on AM radio. And Detroit says, especially with the EV thing, that AM radio interferes with something or other with the battery, so they say they can't include it in the EV thing. I'm out on Detroit anyway. As you know, I bought my first foreign vehicle. Yeah. First time ever. Think about that. As red, white, and blue American as I am and what I stand for me to go in and buy a Japanese vehicle, what I had to go through to do that. But I did it, and it's still got an AM radio on it, and I listen to AM radio. So the customer is always right, and if Detroit wants to keep screwing the pooch on this, just keep doing stuff like this. But let's don't get the government involved and say, we mandate that you've got to have AM radio, because that's the same argument as we mandate you've got to drive an electric vehicle.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I don't think I would agree with that being mandated either. I mean, the only thing that I could think of would be like, I guess, you know, in an emergency situation, maybe they can make an argument that like an emergency broadcast system using AM radio. I don't know.
Cause that's part of the argument.
It does reach a lot further, right?
Right.
Am I understanding that correctly?
It does.
Than FM?
So, you know, I'll give you a basic broadcasting thing, because back in the day when I got into radio, unlike today with this younger generation, not to sound like that guy, but when I got into radio, you actually had to have a license, right? The third class radio telephone operator's permit, and you had to study things like this. So this will be good for the video. Lisa, I hope you're watching on the video, because FM is line of sight. So an FM signal like KFKF's 94.1 goes like this until it hits something, and then it goes away, right? AM signals bounce like this, right? So yeah. So there, especially at night, like at night in Kansas City, you can get stations from Chicago. You certainly can't get any FM stations from Chicago, but you can get AM stations from Chicago. So there might be a public safety concern there in terms of the emergency broadcasting system, or now they call it the emergency alert system. I'm just not buying it. There's too many ways for you to get information right now to say that, you know, Congress has to mandate saving AM radio.
Yeah. Yep, that makes sense. That makes sense to me.
But, you know, I have AM radio on my vehicle. And it's something that I look for, and I'm the consumer, and I'm always going to be right. So there you go.
You are always right, Dale.
I am always right. You know, we almost called this podcast, I'm Dale and I'm Right, which would have had a lot of different meanings. But we settled on Dale Carter's America, and we have a bunch of folks who support this podcast, including our friends Kirk Doris and Lori Hocker. They're at Medicare Simplified KC. The Medicare open enrollment period has now passed for another year. But if you are turning 65 soon, or someone in your family is, and you've got that Medicare pantheon of rabbit holes you can go down coming at you, you need Kirk and Lori on your team. They're a full-service Medicare insurance brokerage. So before you make your choices for the first time for Medicare, make sure that you're dealing with Medicare Simplified KC. They've got thousands of folks here in the Kansas City area who have gone to them, who have navigated all of the pitfalls that come with Medicare, which part, which plan, all that stuff, where the supplements need to come from if you need them, to determine if there are holes in Medicare care for you? They know the answers to it. So reach out to them. MedicareSimplifiedKC.com. They're at 3600 South Nolan Road, Independence. You can reach them on the phone at 816-701-6661. MedicareSimplifiedKC.com. And want to thank our friends at Clay Como Shooters. You know, holidays are here. Christmas is an awesome time. You know, if you've decided that you want to protect your family, or maybe you want to get a new hunting rifle or something like that, they've got everything you need at Clay Como Shooters. And the difference about Clay Como Shooters is they'll train you. They've got a range right there. They've got memberships. Training is something, if you're going to have a firearm in your household, that's a lot of responsibility. Make sure that you're trained so that you're using it correctly, effectively. They work with law enforcement. Heck, they are former law enforcement. They've got pistols, rifles, ammo, accessories, and they invite you to come train with them. Clay Como Shooters, 69 Highway in Clay Como. It's right between I-35 and 435, right there on that main drag in Clay Como. They're on the web at claycomoshooters.com. You can reach them on the phone at 816-452-4867. And when you do, please make sure you tell them you heard about them right here on the Dale Carter's America podcast. All right, politics American style. 2024 is coming at us fast. It's going to start with Iowa and New Hampshire, as it always does. And what a weird year this is going to be. I mean, you can just see it, right? You just see it kind of forming like clouds. We know what kind of a year it's going to be. Majority of the country says what they don't want is Biden-Trump 2.0. They're probably going to get Biden-Trump 2.0.
Yep. So. Yeah, it seems like every election is getting more consequential and weirder, you know, like every election we have, certainly every presidential election, you hear everyone saying, you know, this is the most important election ever. No, this is the most important election ever. But I think you could make an argument that everyone is the most important election.
I don't know that it's going to be the most important consequential election in the history of the Republic. I just think it's going to be the weirdest election in the history of the Republic. You've got former President Biden, who is answering charges in various jurisdictions. You now have Hunter Biden, who has been indicted on, you know, skating on like $1.4 million in taxes. His attorney, this is funny to me, his attorney says, oh, well, if his name weren't Biden, this wouldn't be happening. I mean, we do our taxes every year. My wife is a very smart tax attorney, right? She's very smart. And I still worry that we might have a comma out of place. Mm-hmm. And if we have a comma out of place, the IRS might call. Mm-hmm. And they might do an audit of us. Heck, they might listen to this podcast and say, maybe we need to audit that guy. And Hunter Biden skates on $1.4 million. In fact, it's more than that. There's stuff that's lapsed because of the statute of limitations. But his name's Hunter Biden. That's the only reason they're going after him.
Yeah. Yeah. We skipped ahead a little bit, but I wanted to pull this graphic up because Newsweek, I think it was Newsweek, came out with this. And it's a list of a breakdown of his expenses since 2016, between 2016 and 2019. So if you're just listening to the audio, the total $4.9 million in expenses over those 4 years, and payments to various women. We had $683,000 over those 4 years.
Is that deductible?
Adult entertainment, $188,000. ATM cash withdrawal, $1.6 million in ATM withdrawals. And you can read the rest. But yeah, I mean, the dude is just spending money, man.
Well, and the conspiracy theory that I have heard that's out there is that the only reason they're going after Hunter Biden right now is to show that Trump's prosecutions are not political in nature, that they're being even-handed. They're going after the Biden family. They're going after Trump. And yet a further conspiracy theory out there is that this is like the first crack in the iceberg of showing Joe the door. It's like, you know, we're going to just move you off the stage. Although, man, this election's coming fast.
Yeah.
And I don't know who. I mean, you know, you had Gavin Newsom and Ron DeSantis do that little debate thing over on Fox News.
Did you watch that?
I didn't watch it. I meant to record it and I forgot to. I saw some clips of it. And honestly, it wasn't what I hoped it would be. What I hoped it would be just pure policy, boring stuff. You know, this is what we're doing in California. This is what we're doing in Florida. Which one makes the most sense for the country moving forward? And it devolved into, you know, DeSantis referring to the vice president as Kamala Harris or Kamala. What, he mispronounced her name. And, you know, Gavin went off on that.
Yeah, I did watch it. Gavin Newsom is an incredibly talented politician.
He really is.
The dude is just like knows how to spin. He knows how to present himself. He knows how to talk on camera, and he knows how to, you know, try and chip at people. He's a good debater too, but more than that, he's just a very talented politician. I think he's a force to be reckoned with, man. It might not be this time. You know, it is getting kind of late for them to show Biden the door and swap somebody else in. And he, you know, Newsom says he's not running and blah, blah, blah. But certainly he's setting himself up for, you know, the next go around at the very least.
Well,
you know,
he might be a talented politician, but to me, it's always going to come down to policy. And I'm going to look at California and ask the question, do I want to see that in the rest of this country? And I don't. And I've been to Florida many times. I love the state of Florida. In fact, I went down there during COVID, right? And I got off the plane and people weren't wearing masks. And I'm like, what? You don't have to wear a mask? Well, you can if you want to. My God, I'm in America again. Right? So, you know, I thought he did well with that. I thought he did well with the hurricane that wiped out, you know, the Captiva, Sanibel Island area. I just think Ron DeSantis is a really good, maybe not a great politician, but I think he's a good leader. And I think he gets things done. So maybe we'll have that debate down the road. But right now what we get is Biden-Trump 2.0. Did you find a clip of Joey saying that if Trump weren't in it, he might not be running?
So apparently that was to behind closed doors to donors or something like that. It was in a Bloomberg article. I didn't find a clip of that. I did find a clip of Trump responding to Biden saying that.
So okay, well, let's roll that.
This was with Sean Hannity at the town hall they had the other night.
Joe Biden, I'm sure he mumbled the words as usual. Yeah. He said this, if Trump wasn't running, I'm not sure I'd be running, he said at a campaign event today. Yeah. How do you react to that?
Well, I think somebody gave him a talking point. They thought that would sound good. You know, I just found out that Democrats are funding Nikki Haley's campaign. I hear that Democrats are contributing to Ron DeSanctis' campaign. And then you hear the talking points. That's the only thing they're good at, cheating on elections and great talking points. They say, we want to run against Trump. They want to run. Well, we did really well in 2016, and we did so much better in 2020. The person they don't want to run against is us. It's us. It's not me. It's us. Because it's a movement the likes of which this country, Sean, has never seen before.
At the beginning,
we have never seen the likes of what we've all done together. This is me, not me, it's everybody here and millions. I think it's not 75 million people. I think it's 150 million people. It might be more than that. I mean, who doesn't want to see strong borders and a strong military and low taxes and low interest rates and go out and buy a house?
He seems to be able to talk right off the cuff and not need those talking points. He brought up something interesting about Nikki Haley, and I want to skip to that because there's a new poll out today, the Wall Street Journal. This is why I think 2024 is going to be the weirdest election in American history. Okay, the Journal poll puts former South Carolina Republican Governor Nikki Haley up 17 points over Joe Biden in a head-to-head election. All right, 51-34. That's bigger than the 4 points that the president, former president, holds over Biden right now in the Wall Street Journal poll. But then Haley still trails Trump for the nomination by more than 40 points.
Yeah.
So, you know, is what Trump's saying true? Are the Democrats funding Nikki Haley's campaign? Maybe she should drop out and go as an independent.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if they are. She certainly is, in my opinion, you know, soft on a lot of issues. She is a warmonger, pro-war in Ukraine. and other things, you know, that are kind of part of that whole swampy thing. But yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's just one poll, and she's not going to be the nominee, so does it really matter? I don't know.
So Trump, you had a clip of Trump there responding to Biden. He also was asking that Hannity forum if did Hannity ask him the question, "Would you be a dictator?"
No, he said.
Because the quote that came back was, Trump says he would only be a dictator for a day.
I'll play the clip.
Issue, though, because the media has been focused on this and attacking you under no circumstances. You are promising America tonight. You would never abuse power as retribution against anybody.
Except for day one.
Except
for he's going crazy. Except for day one.
Meaning?
I want to close the border and I want to drill.
That's not retribution.
I'm gonna be, you know, he keeps we love this guy. He says, "You're not gonna be a dictator, are you?" I said, No, other than day one. We're closing the border and we're drilling. After that, I'm not a dictator.
That's what the mainstream press came with. Donald Trump says he would be a dictator for a day, right? So these are the kinds of things where, you know, the red meat and the people who love Trump and would vote for him would write him in even if he were not going to run. They love this stuff. Those suburban women out there, they don't love this so much. This is kind of like being a Howard Stern shock jock, if you will. I mean, there was a way to say this. He could have said, "I'll do exactly what Joe Biden did. On day one, I'll go in and I'll sign a whole bunch of executive orders and I'll overturn everything, all the mistakes that Joe Biden made on day one. And we'll get back to the things like a secure border and drilling and being energy independent again." But he has to throw out words like dictator because that's red meat for the other side. And trust me, Kurt, they are programming, they are aiming their message at those suburban women who are uncomfortable voting with Donald Trump. They're out there. Whether you want to acknowledge it or not, they're out there.
I mean, he's just doing a bit. It's really not that
I know,
big of a deal.
I know. And if he were a shock jock like Stern, that'd be funny as hell, right?
It is funny.
It is funny. It's
so
funny to me.
What's the big deal? I don't understand.
Well, then you didn't follow the last election. Because in the last election, there were a lot of suburban women out there who could not pull the lever for Donald Trump. And I still think that's the difference.
I mean, are people not going to vote for him because he made a joke about being a dictator for a day?
I hope
the case, then they should probably take the stick out of their ass. I mean, lighten up a little bit. Jesus.
There are a lot of people in this country that need the stick removed from their ass. And we're
not even to
Dr. Mark yet, but there are plenty of people who need the stick removed from their ass. I don't know.
He talks like normal people talk. It's a bit. It's not a big deal. Like
I so much want to turn the tide back to where we were before Joe Biden took over that I'm just being very cautious. I don't want him to step on his own junk on the way back to the White House. If he's going to be the nominee, he needs to be the next president again. Because we cannot have another 4 years. You know, we're going to be lucky to get to the end of term number one of Joe Biden. That's how bad things are right now.
Right. So. I totally agree.
All right. So Melania now is on board with Tucker Carlson being Donald Trump's running mate. And I know you think that's kind of cool, too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's his time, per se, because he's launching a new media company. Apparently, he just had a big interview with Alex Jones this past week, who is now back on Twitter, which is great. So he's really doing a lot of important work, you know, in the media. So I think that's to in my opinion, that's kind of where he belongs right now. But you know, he probably will get into politics more directly at some point.
Let me throw one at you, just kind of out of left field. What do you think of Sarah Huckabee Sanders?
I don't really know that much about her. She was I thought she was a good press secretary.
Well, she's doing a good job running Arkansas.
Yeah. I haven't really been following to be totally honest. I don't want to, you know, say anything out of,
I mean, if the polls are right and we're going to find out what's going to happen in Iowa and New Hampshire, that Donald Trump's probably going to be the nominee. We need to start thinking about people that you can put around him that, you know, are going to be effective leaders and maybe building a bench for the future. And, you know, I wondered about that because really all she'd been is press secretary for Donald Trump. And then she ran for governor of Arkansas and she won. And she's doing some really good work down in Arkansas, particularly in education. So I'm a big fan of hers.
Yeah, and I think it does make sense too, you know, since he was already president, to maybe bring somebody in from that he's already kind of worked with, you know what I mean, that he's had on his team before. That would probably make for an easier transition. Not Mike Pence, obviously.
They won't be Mike Pence.
Somebody else.
Still in the politics realm here, to the United States Senate, we talked about the power of one senator when we were talking about Rand Paul holding up a mandate for AM radio in vehicles. Tommy Tuberville is a senator from Alabama, and he has been holding up the promotion of military leaders for a while now over the military's policy to pay for service members to travel for abortion. He let that go for a little bit to get, like, I think it was like 400 promotions that had been sitting on a desk moved along the line, but he is still holding the line on 4 stars, trying to, you know, bring the military to heel there, that, you know, we don't want the military paying for service members to travel out of state for abortions.
Yeah, good for him.
Speaking of the Congress, now we move to the House of Representatives, where Speaker Johnson is tying any new Ukraine funding to border security. And remember, funding bills start in the House. And, you know, I know Ukraine's not your favorite subject to talk about, Kurt, but we're almost out of money in terms of what Congress has appropriated for defense of Ukraine. So the Biden administration is back on the Hill with their hand out, and the new speaker is saying, yeah, we might be able to talk about this if you'll fund the border security, which, you know, horse trading happens all the time in Washington, D.C., and at least somebody out there is talking about border security.
Yeah, talking about it. We'll see. I mean, if anything gets done, I don't know. I'm a little apprehensive. And it's also just like, why does it have to be, why does more Ukraine funding have to be tied to border security? How about no more funding for Ukraine and we want border security? I mean, that's what we need. Why did the two things have to be tied together
at all?
Well,
if you had a Republican president and a Republican majority in the Senate and the House, you know, we wouldn't be doing horse trading. But because we have a split government right now, you've got to do some horse trading to get some things done. Yep. That's just where we are. Speaking of the border, FBI Director Christopher Wray was on Capitol Hill, and this ought to be sobering. He says warning lights are going off everywhere. Do we have that clip?
Yes. Right here.
Sherry committee hearing.
What I would say that is unique about the environment that we're in right now in my career is that while there may have been times over the years where individual threats could have been higher here or there than where they might be right now, I've never seen a time where all the threats, or so many of the threats, are all elevated all at exactly the same time. That's what makes this environment that we're in now so fraught, and why funding our men and women who are working shoulder to shoulder with state and local law enforcement and other partners every day makes it even more important, not less.
So, blinking red lights analogy about 9/11, all the lights were blinking red before 9/11. Apparently, obviously, all of us missed it. Would you say that there's multiple blinking red lights out there?
I see blinking lights everywhere I turn.
Okay, all right. Can't say any better than that.
Yeah. So, but, you know, a portion of the FBI focused on radical traditionalist Catholics being investigated by the FBI, all the way down to the parish level, where, you know, investigators were looking into church choirs, you know, at Catholic churches and all that. And Josh Hawley, who's a great voice on the right, is a senator from Missouri, and he really took the FBI director to task. I don't know if that was the same hearing or not, but it was in front of the Senate. So let's roll the clip on Josh Hawley.
Director, this is one of the most outrageous targetings. You have mobilized your division, the most powerful law enforcement division in the world, against traditionalist Catholics, whatever the heck that means. And you just told us you have not fired a single person. I mean, here, it gets worse. Your Richmond field office, they thought there was nothing wrong with this. The House interviewed the head of the Richmond field office. He testified. It's all here in the public report. I refer you to it, pages 12, 13, 14. He testified he saw no problem with this. He said he thought it was fine. In fact, we have internal memoranda of the members of the field office high-fiving one peer reviewer, another member of the field office, wrote, I think this is a great product. I really enjoyed the read. Do you have a problem with systemic bigotry against Catholics in the FBI?
No.
What are you going to do about this? Are you going to fire these people or not?
Those individuals have all been admonished, and it is all going into their, if you would let me finish my answer, it is all going into their annual performance reviews, which has direct impact on their,
so they won't get a bonus,
among other things.
Oh, I see. So the 60 million American Catholics who now learn that your FBI has recommended that priests be recruited as informants, your FBI has gone to priests, choir directors, but we're to feel better because you've admonished them for their wrongdoing.
You again are conflating two different things.
I'm not. I am taking your testimony where you said you do not. You said categorically, you said we do not go to priests and ask them about their parishioners. You said we do not. You didn't say we haven't. You didn't say we won't. You said we don't. As it turns out, you do. And you kept it from the public. You deliberately misled Congress about it. And the only reason we know about it is because a whistleblower came forward.
That's fundamentally disagree with your characterization.
Well, there's no characterization. The facts are the facts. And I fundamentally resent the fact that you have violated, if not the spirit, if not the letter, certainly the spirit of the First Amendment, and use your law enforcement agency against Catholics in this nation.
Okay, so think about this. You've got red lights going off all over the place. We have a porous southern border, you know, where terrorists can come in, do whatever they're going to do. There are probably cells here already. Red lights are flashing everywhere. That's according to the FBI director. And you've got people in a field office who are more concerned about radical traditionalist Catholics, again, quoting Senator Hawley, whatever the hell that means, and people weren't fired.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we put something in their file. It's probably going to hurt them at review time. Yeah. You got to fire people occasionally, right?
Yeah. It reminds me of the scene from, I got to skip past an ad, but the scene from Team America World Police. You ever see
this? Oh, I love that movie.
It's like one of my favorite movies
ever. I love that movie.
A top three. But yeah, you know, he's like, Holly's like, what are you going to do about it? And he's like, well, it's going to go into their performance review. And it's like the scene from Team America where with the UN guy. So I'm going to play that real quick.
Oh, no. Oh, hello. Great to see you again, Hans.
Mr. Ill, I was supposed to be allowed to inspect your palace today, and your guards won't let me into certain areas.
Hans, we've been through this a dozen times. I don't have any weapons of mass destruction, okay, Hans?
Then let me look around so I can ease the UN's collective mind.
Hans, you're breaking my balls here, Hans. You're breaking my balls.
I'm sorry, but the UN must be firm with you. Let me see your whole palace or else.
Or else what?
Or else we will be very, very angry with you. And we will write you a letter telling you how angry we are.
Okay, I'll show you, Hans. You ready? Stand ready to your left.
Yeah, you gotta stand a little closer to the middle there. funny movie. Know that it's, you know, full of F-bombs and all that kind of fun stuff. But
not kid appropriate,
but a very funny movie. All right. That kind of takes me to the last thing here in the political deal. I saw this from San Francisco. They're cracking down on non-Chinese candidates using Chinese names.
I was confused about this when you put it in the notes, so I'm going to let you explain what the hell's happening here.
Well, I guess, you know, that I would assume it's in Chinatown, for instance, where it would be more advantageous for you to have a Chinese surname. People are putting that on the ballot as they run for various offices. And the city put out a deal that said you have to have been using this name for a certain length of time in order to use it on the ballot.
So people make their names sound Chinese.
Exactly. Because they're appropriating Chinese culture in order to get an easier path to victory in an election. But only in San Francisco will they crack down on non-Chinese candidates using Chinese names.
I'm trying to look for examples in the article.
I just thought it was a funny story. What? Go ahead.
Here's one. San Francisco supervisor Dean Preston, who is of German descent, according to the Standard, requested to appear on the ballot as three Chinese characters, or whatever that is. Xing Tin Sing, which means Justice Pan in Chinese.
There you go. Well, you know, we just had the president of China make a little snap inspection in San Francisco, and they cleaned up all the homeless people and the poop from the sidewalk.
Yeah,
so honestly, apparently the Chinese, you know, it's a big deal there.
That makes sense. We'll all have Chinese names soon enough.
Yeah. Well, we all have a roof over our heads. We hope so, and that roof should come from Royal Roofing and Solar. We thank them for being part of the podcast, Austin Watterson's fantastic company that put the roof over my house at Casa del Carter. They're also working in the solar world, too, and I'm seeing a lot more folks who are in their forever home. I mean, I'm in my house long enough for me to get to retirement, so I'm not quite there for solar at that house. But if you are, if that's your long-term home and you want to turn your home into its own power generation unit, let them show you how to do that. Mike Dale is the expert on solar at Royal Roofing at 816-540-7057. If it's time for a new roof, get the inspection. You know, if we have a big weather event or something, if we have a hailstorm, get the folks from Royal Roofing out there. They'll shoot you straight on what you need, and they'll take care of you. A great company in Cass County, family owned and operated, 816-540-7057 for Royal Roofing and Solar. And of course, when you gather your family or your friends, you know, the holidays is a great time. Maybe you don't want the whole family in your house. Maybe you want to gather somewhere and let somebody else deal with all the things like the cooking the food and cleaning up the mess afterwards in a fun environment. We're talking about Fun House Pizza, 50 Highway in Lee's Summit, 7 Highway in Blue Springs, two great locations. Jim Dingman is the man. He's going to take care of you. When you walk in there, you just know it's a fun environment. There's video games all around that kids love to play. There's rides for the littles. There's fantastic pizza, cold drinks. You just won't want to miss out on that environment. Whether it's your family, whether it's your sports team, club, whatever's going on there, they'll take care of you in a group setting. Funhouse Pizza, 50 Highway in Lee's Summit, 7 Highway in Blue Springs. And we thank Jim Dingman for being part of Dale Carter's America. You know, when Bill Clinton won the presidency, I think, first of all, James Carville was brilliant in coming up with a strategy for Bill Clinton to win the presidency, because the economy was going south at that time, and he just told Bill Clinton, forget about everything else, it's the economy, stupid. And if you can relate to people who are struggling in this economy right now, you'll win the presidency. Get a little help from Ross Perot to split off the Republican vote, and voila, at 42% of the vote, Bill Clinton became president. But it's the same today. It's the economy, stupid. It's the economy, stupid. Everything relates back to the economy. Even the southern border relates back to the economy. Energy relates back to the economy. And then you ask the question, and I think, you know, Donald Trump, maybe he gets points for saying, I'd be a dictator, but just for a day. I mean, I know you like that line and all that, but I like the line of, how's Joe Biden working out for you? How's it working out around the dinner table? You know, how's it working out? You know, when you fill up your gas tank, when you pay your electric bill, your gas bill, you know, you get a new mortgage with these high interest rates. How's that all working out for you? Of course, what they say in their talking points, KJP, the spokesmodel there, says it's just awesome. You know, 14.1 million jobs created. That's the new number. All right. And now over on X, since you got a guy running it who actually believes in the First Amendment, they have community notes, which allows fact checking. And if you really want to fact check that, 72% of those 14.1 million jobs aren't new jobs. They were recovered from the pandemic, which is what Donald Trump told Joe Biden. He said on the way out, he said, look, if you don't do anything, the economy is going to come back. It's going to be fine. Of course, Biden couldn't do that because he had the left tugging at him to the far left. And that's why he had to go in and do all of those executive orders to fundamentally change our country, at least for 4 years. He did all that stuff. So 72% of the jobs recovered from the pandemic. The Biden economy, if you want to put a number on it, has produced somewhere around 3.5 million, which would be anemic. So think about that. Think about people who are coming back to work from the pandemic. Think about any new jobs that have been created. And then you have this, Robert Kiyosaki, who I'm a big fan of. He is the author of the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Have you read that, Kurt?
Mm-mm.
Good book. I don't 100% agree with him. I'm more of a Dave Ramsey guy, and I can contrast those two different styles for you. But Kiyosaki's the one who correctly called the 2008 recession. He's calling for a similar collapse, and he says this time it's about our crushing debt. And I looked at the debt clock, and the debt clock seems to me to be going faster. We're at almost $34 trillion. I mean, when we started this podcast, I want to say we had barely cracked 30 trillion, and now we're at 30, almost, it's 33.9 trillion when I looked at it last time. What's it look like?
33.9.
There you go. And it's continuing to grow.
Debt per citizen is $100,000. Debt per taxpayer is $259,000. So, yeah.
It's bad. It's, and most people are like putting their head in the sand and not really thinking about it, but it's bad, and a day of reckoning is coming. Now, Kiyosaki's the kind of guy who says that you should look at your home and your mortgage not as an asset, but as a liability, and he thinks that the way to build wealth is for you to use debt smartly and buy more houses, right? And get into the rental property deal. But I know me, I'm not exactly Mr. Fix-It. So I don't see me doing that. I see that as a disaster. So I'm more of a Dave Ramsey guy. You know, I believe in going through the baby steps of getting rid of debt. In fact, if the economy craters, I think I'm going to be well positioned for the economy to crater. A lot of people will not be, who have relied on debt, who are falling on the debt sword, if you will. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then if you listen to Joey B and his ilk, what do they say? What's their solution to all this?
I don't know.
That's a question.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, their solution is, well, you got to tax the rich.
Yeah.
Right? That's what they always say. That's play number two in the Democrat playbook. Somebody has something that you don't have, and that's not fair. So he says tax the rich. All those billionaires. Now, that's awesome in theory. And most people in this country are not billionaires, because I did a little search on this. We have 748 billionaires in this country. So you are probably not a billionaire listening to this podcast. Do you know how much money they control?
A lot, but not that much.
They control $5 trillion.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not a math major here. If you took all of their money, which you're not going to do, but right, if you took all of their money, we'd still be at $29 trillion in debt, and the clock would still be speeding up, because we spend. This country is literally drowning in government spending, and it's never enough for the Democrats. They always want to spend more, and it's always going to be more. I think about, you know, World War II. You know, Neville Chamberlain went to Berlin, and he met with Adolf Hitler. And he came away with a peace agreement that said, okay, you can have the Sudetenland, and then you're going to be done, right? And Hitler's like, yeah, I'm going to be done. And so Chamberlain, you've seen the picture. I know it's way before your time, but you know, he's waving the paper, and he says, this is peace in our time, right? And as soon as he took the plane back to London and got off the plane, Hitler had already made plans to go into Poland and in France and everywhere else he was going to go. It's kind of the same with the Democrats. Not that I'm calling them Nazis, because they call us Nazis. What I'm saying is, you can't appease. And we're appeasing Democrats by all these spending programs. And it's never enough. Have you ever heard Bernie Sanders speak? It's never enough.
Yeah. No, it's, of course.
When is it enough?
Well, the point is that it's never enough, because if it was ever going to be enough, they'd be able to put a concrete number on it, and then they wouldn't have anything to gripe about anymore. I mean, it's like racism or sexism or anything like that. If you solve the problem, if there is no racism, if there is no sexism, if there is no more money to give, then there's no problem for them to gripe about to get elected anymore. So by definition, it has to never be enough, because that's what they thrive on in order to gain popularity and power.
And our government continues to expand, right?
Yeah.
It's not contracting. And we talk about this even when Republicans are in play. It will be very interesting because we've had a couple of things that have really spurred on the debt clock. And I would say 9/11 was one of those that spurred on the debt clock. And obviously the pandemic spurred on the debt clock. Okay, we don't have 9/11 right now. We have the pandemic under control. Why are we still growing government at the rate that we're growing it? $34 trillion if you round up 33.9. What can you do about it? I'll tell you what I've done. What I've told my kids, I don't know if I've ever told you this because you're basically the same age as my kids. You know, you got to find something that you love to do. Have you found something you love to do?
Yeah.
You love doing this?
Yeah.
Love working at the radio station. I mean, I'm doing what I always wanted to do with some side hustles like the podcast here and, you know, being stadium voice for the Chiefs and all that. So find something that you love to do. All right. Live on less than you make. Mm-hmm. Are you doing that?
Yeah.
Try. I would hope so. You got a baby on the way.
Yeah, try.
You know, live on less than you make because those credit cards, just think about that. You know, I have a couple of credit cards and I pay them off every month. If you don't pay them off every month, the interest rates are confiscatory. I mean, right now, we just lowered mortgage rates if you have really good credit to 7%. Think about this. Last time I refied my house, 2.6%.
Yeah.
Okay. We backed it down to 7. We're probably not going to see the 2s again. So if you look at your credit card statement, I can't even imagine what those interest rates are. What are they? 30%?
Depending on the card, but yeah, they're up there. I mean,
way up there. So yeah. Pay off your credit cards. So find something you love, live on less than you make. And this is the one that I've had the hardest time convincing my kids. And I don't know where you are on it, Kurt, because you've got a young family and all that. Save for retirement earlier than you think you need to. If you do those things, if you stay out of debt and you save for retirement earlier than you think you need to, and you're doing something for a living that you love, you will be on top of this thing when it craters. And it is going to crater. It's not sustainable. What we are doing is not sustainable. And I love it because they keep coming to us for more money, right? Ukraine wants more money. Israel wants more money. Everybody wants more money. We have no money. Do you not get that? We have no money. We're $34 trillion in debt. Any money that we have, we're basically printing phony money. So I don't know. I always grew up with the feeling that this was the richest country on the face of the earth. And in a lot of ways, I still feel that way because, you know, even poor people in this country, it seems like all have cell phones. I mean, we have the richest poor people in the world. But we're not rich. If anything, we're bankrupt and we're going to need an enema. America needs an enema. America needs Dr. Mark Terramina. It's not enough, Dr. Terramina, that you're handling all the GI needs of the greater Kansas City area at Midwest GI Health and Wellness. We need you to stick that hose up Congress and flood the Potomac. Can you imagine the amount of shit the Potomac would fill up with?
Let's go.
It would be crazy. but until that day, if you're 45 or older and you have not had your colonoscopy, I was talking to somebody online today on Facebook Messenger who is getting a colonoscopy, and they're like, oh my God, this prep. But think about it. You do all the prep, right, for a day or two. You lose a lot of weight. You go in, you take a nap, and when you wake up, you get the good news. That either you're clean as a whistle and don't need to come back for 10 years, or they found a couple of things, but in the early stages, it's very treatable and you're going to live. If you don't, and you've got some problems down there, and you don't get it looked at early, colon cancer will kill you. No joking on that. It will kill you. They'll take care of the entire GI tract, but it's one-stop shopping in Lee's Summit. 4.9 out of 5 stars. That's the Google rating. Highest in Kansas City. Full team there. Dr. Mark Terramina, Midwest GI Health and Wellness, online at MidwestGIHealth.com. You could reach him in the office there in Lee's Summit, 816-836-2200, 816-836-2200. 800. And of course, we always thank Bob Watson. Bob's been with us since nearly the beginning of this podcast. He's a big believer in what we talk about. The common sense things that we lay out on this podcast, very much what Bob Watson at State Farm is going to lay out for you as well. You know, if you've got car insurance, do you have the right car insurance? Do you have the right coverages? Do you have an umbrella policy? What if somebody trips and falls on your property? If you've got assets, that's not going to be good for you. Bob Watson can talk you through that. Health insurance, pet insurance. They cover everything you care about at State Farm, and Bob Watson is the key. 7th and Main in Blue Springs, 816-229-7878. 816-229-7878. Auto, home, life, commercial insurance, licensed in both Kansas and Missouri, so he can take care of you here in the Kansas City Metro. He is my State Farm agent, and I'll gladly share him with you. In the last week, and you know, as I said on Facebook, it's tough to be sad when you lose somebody who was 101 years old. I mean, that's a full life. That's a life plus a little bit. But we did lose the famous producer, Norman Lear. Norman Lear really was comedy in the 70s in a way that we had never seen it before. Because before Norman Lear came along, if you had comedy, it was like Lucille Ball, it was slapstick stuff, people falling down, you know, stuff like that. Norman Lear put thought into it, and he meant a lot to the American culture. He, with his comedy, made us uncomfortable. Now, Kurt, you weren't around when this was on, but it's in reruns now. And people look at it now, and it's like, okay, that's kind of funny. And in some ways, you look at it and you go, you could never make this again. But at the top of the list for him, All in the Family. All in the Family had some spinoffs. It spun off the Jeffersons. They were the neighbors to the Bunkers. It spun off Maude. It wasn't a spinoff, but Sanford and Son was also one of those shows that really made you think, made you uncomfortable. And in that uncomfortableness, told you that you could laugh and it would be okay. Archie Bunker is the number one character that he produced. And I will say this, Norman Lear was very liberal. He and I would not agree on policy. He wouldn't agree with you either, Kurt. But where this comes in, where race relations come in, I think that Norman Lear did more for America and for bringing the races together than the Al Sharptons, Jesse Jacksons of the world have done in their entire lives. Because through characters, he showed us that, you know, this is what some of you are saying, and you can laugh at this guy, but he's always the butt of the joke, right? Archie Bunker is always the butt of the joke. And it's, I don't know. You got a clip you want to roll?
And also, I think my understanding, you know, I wasn't alive then, but my understanding is that he made Archie Bunker to sort of be like an antagonistic character, like an anti-hero or something like that. But people actually liked him. Like, people actually identified with him because he was funny and he spoke in like a offensive way, you know, and it made people more comfortable to kind of just be themselves when you know, maybe they didn't feel like they could. But I have an Archie Bunker clip that I'll play, one of the more famous ones.
Bill, and he knows
it. That's not only cruel, Daddy, that's an outright lie.
You know something, Archie, just because a guy is sensitive and he's an intellectual and he wears glasses, you make him out a queer.
I never said a guy who wears glasses is a queer. A guy who wears glasses is a four eyes. A guy who's a fag is a queer. Well, go ahead, Edith. Now answer the guy. Now, you've seen Roger sashaying around here with his la-di-da talk. He's a pansy.
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I'm not an expert on flowers.
You might as well face it. You're all alone in this. We all know Roger, and we all know he's straight. And even if he wasn't, and I said if, what difference would that make? Do you know that in many countries, England, for instance, there is a law that says whatever two consenting adults do in private is their own business?
Listen, this ain't England. We threw England out of here a long time ago. We don't want no more part of England. And for your information, England is a fag country. they still picking handkerchiefs out of their sleeve, huh? Are they still standing around leaning on them skinny umbrellas like this here? I know. The whole society is based on a kind of a vagdom.
You know you're right, Archie. You're right. The British are a bunch of pansies. Pansies, fairies, and sissies. And the Japanese are a race of midgets. The Irish are boozers. The Mexicans are bandits.
And you Polacks are meatheads.
But that was all funny stuff, but it made you a little bit uncomfortable. One of the clips that I played on KFKF when Norman Lear died was with George Jefferson, who was his neighbor. And you talk about race relations, the black folks who moved in next door and all of the conflict that produced. And Archie was talking about going out on strike or something. And George Jefferson, you know, who owned dry cleaner stores, you know, he got in Archie's face. And he says, you know, the problem with you people. And Archie stops and says, wait a minute. We're not you people. You're you people. That's the kind of stuff that Norman Lear brought to the front. And he had characters who said stuff that nobody else would at the time. And like so many things that are out there in the culture, could probably never be made again. Norman Lear passed away last week. He was 101. So with that, we leave you with another episode here. And until next week, when we get back together again, closer and closer to Christmas, this is Dale Carter's America.
The views expressed on Dale Carter's America are Dale's and Kurt Wheeler's. They do not necessarily reflect the views of KFKF or Steel City Media. Comments can be sent to DaleCartersAmerica@gmail.com. Check back for weekly episodes. Subscribe, spread the word, and give us a 5-star review. Thanks for being a part of Dale Carter's America.